iPhone 16 Pro is here with cinematic slow motion and the power of Apple Intelligence. Plus, stay connected in busy crowds with EE's enhanced 5G.
It's so packed!
Come on, guys, let's get to the front!
Film the band!
That video is wicked!
The new iPhone 16 Pro on the UK's best network. Search EE iPhone.
Available on all-rounder and full works plan in 5G standalone ready areas. Verify best network at ee.co.uk/claims. Apple Intelligence coming December 2024.
This episode is brought to you by Pepsi Max. With the UEFA Champions League kicking off and a brand new format for the new season, you've got to wonder, will anything ever be the same? Well, one thing you can know for sure is that Pepsi Max, as proud sponsors of the Men's and Women's Champions League, will be cheering from the sidelines like never before. Pepsi Max, thirsty for more.
You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, October 23rd, 2024. I'm your good buddy, Joe O'Brien, and man, oh man, have we got a fantastic FOD on deck for you today with some special guests replacing my good buddy, Troy. Troy is off this week. On this week for the Fodder is nearly the entire cast of Legacy of the Ancients, ladies and gentlemen. Skidmar, Sidney Emmanuel, Matthew Kabatakaza. All in the house. What's up, everybody? How's it going?
What's up?
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Hi. It's good to see you all.
I'm really excited for these special guests you mentioned.
Yeah.
I've can't wait to see who that is.
I've always wanted to meet them.
You know, I've gotten that from Troy in the past. I've used the term special guest about someone or other, and he's just like, don't call them that. They're just on the network. I'm like, okay. But it's not often, though, that we get a fantastic group such as yourselves to come together on the FOD and reflect on the work that we've been doing as of late. Several different shows, and today we're going to talk about the Glass Cannon podcast. We're also going to talk about Legacy. We'll do a little bit of news, of course, and definitely get into some listener mail. I think my idea for this one is we'll talk a little bit of news at the top, and then we'll go into Glass Cannon podcast. Let's talk about Gatewalkers for a minute. Really big turn here at the end of book one, going into book two. So we'll chat about that, get your guys' kind of take on that stuff for a minute. And then We Are Stupid, of course, obviously, where I get to talk to you directly about how stupid you are, which is wonderful.
Tell us to our face.
And then we'll get into some legacy talk. For those that are not caught up, you could just tune it out if you'd like, because there will be some spoilers in there. But we are going to talk legacy because it's been a while since we've had a chance to just reflect on the campaign. So kicking it off with a little bit of news off the top, I want to let everybody know Extra Life is coming again. If we hadn't told you this before, previously, if you hadn't seen it posted on social yet, Saturday, November 2nd, save the date. That's just in a week and a half now. Save that date all day long. 24 hours will be streaming. Don't even have the content schedule ironed out yet. It's going to be a lot of fun, different stuff, but you should see a little bit of all of us, hopefully, throughout the day and evening, streaming video games and RPGs, and for a great cause, raising money for children's hospitals all over the country. So, yeah, you can find our page on Extra Life, on Extra Life's website, extralife.org, and you can donate to our team page. You can donate to us individually. You can start your own profile and join our team and stream and raise money if you'd like to get toward the Glass Cannon's ultimate goal this year. So join very us. Much so looking forward to that. What's that?
I said join us.
Join us. Yes. It's going to be awesome. And then one last piece of news. I mean, this is just too fun. Skid, are we going to finish the Space Marine 2 campaign tomorrow?
Oh, I think so.
I think we might. Tomorrow, Thursday, 12 o'clock Eastern, Skid, Rob Kirkovich, and I are going to stream Space Marine 2, and I think we're going to finish it.
I think this last part's pretty long, but I think, yeah, we could possibly do it.
It might be too long, but it
finish
is.
Finish it before I have to go to the airport. Yeah.
Skid is streaming right on the wire. He's got to like shut down and run to the airport.
Literally run to the airport. I'm not even
I'm excited
taking
you're
car
squeezing it in. Running, man. Skid, let me get some of your early takes on Warhammer's Space Marine 2, the video game. What are your takeaways?
It's great. I'm really not. I don't play a ton of shooters or really action games anymore, but. It's so refreshing to have a game come out with that much hype in a universe that I really like and to be as well polished and executed as it is. Like it's great. I'm really enjoying it.
Does this interest you at all, Sydney?
You know, my friend recently asked me to get Space Marines because he really wants to play. It does. I'm peripherally interested in Warhammer, but not enough to buy the game. Like, I know it would be fun, but do I really need another $60 game that I'm, like, not that invested in?
$40 game.
Sorry, $40 game.
Thank you, Skip.
I get why people love it, and I watched your gameplay. Like, I watched you guys play, and it looks like a ton of fun. And I personally love the melee combat mechanics because I'm not a big shooter person, but the fact that you can get up in there and, like, rip a robot in half with like cool combos. I'm like, hell yeah, that part I'm into.
Okay.
But I like watching you guys. You guys seem good at it and I like that.
The game is actually $60. I'm sorry.
Well, we're back to where we started.
Sorry. I was thinking of Battle Sector, which is
I'm
much
glad you
cheaper.
Came clean. I appreciate your honesty.
You should pick up Battle Sector. It's a lot cheaper.
I'll write that down.
Yeah, if price point is your final. Sid, you seem sad.
What?
Are you okay? You seem sad. What are you just sick?
What's going
on? Just down?
I have a little bit of a cold. We were all talking about this. This is what old people talk about. They're like, anybody else got a cold?
And then anybody we talk about body hurt in weird ways.
For 30 minutes. Like, what's your cold like? Is it your throat? Is your throat? I have a little bit of a cold. And, you know, it's that weird time of year where we're gearing up for the holidays, but we're not close enough yet. And I feel like, not stress, but I get this weird thing with time where I feel like I'm out of time. Like, the holidays haven't even happened yet, but I'm like, oh, soon it's going to be New Year's. Like, that's where my brain's at. I'm like, soon, like, it's going to, everything's happening too fast. So I'm trying to, like, be like, Sydney, take a breath. Halloween hasn't even happened
yet. Right. Take a breath. You got to take it one step at a time.
Enjoy the seasonal changes.
But you already have Matthew and Skid's birthday present, I'm assuming.
Oh.
If you don't have that, then you really are fucked. Like, yeah. Then you're way behind already.
No, I do.
Okay, perfect. So as long as that's set, you've got time till Thanksgiving. Don't worry about it.
Totally. And I'm not stressed at all. You've really helped with my stress by mentioning that.
It's okay. We'll just announce on the network what you got us.
Yeah.
I love that.
Oh, my God. Next week's FOD. That could be a segment. What did we get from Sydney?
And just show the gift on video.
Oh, wow. That is a great.
I'll do that for you.
We want everyone to know. I'm excited for everyone to be able to share in this.
You're so generous. And it's there's so no special. Reason. Yeah, and so special. We should just sing that from the rooftops.
If you I
just
can't wait.
Especially because, like, in classic Sydney fashion, like, it's not some heartless, like, thing you just buy online. Like, it's handmade. You know, like, she personally makes those gifts. So
if you hear, like,
I'm
my keyboard through the microphone for the next 40 minutes, unrelated to this.
Oh, man. Well, we are all a little bit under the weather. I blame Matthew. I think he gave it to us. He came to a Glass Cannon podcast recording. He warned us. He said, and this always cracks me up, I'll wear a mask, which is just stupid, because then you take it off and you're 8 inches away from me for 4 hours at a time. I appreciate the effort. But I think you infected us with your.
I don't think I did because gross. At that point my doctor told me I was not contagious.
Can you believe your doctor?
I'm going to guess it was actually the hundreds of people we interacted with in close fashion in Portland and Los Angeles.
Yes,
yeah. All those people spitting into our mouths. You know, over the course of 4 days,
which we request. Right, so it's
part of the meet and greet.
I do want to say, though, this is very exciting to do the FOD with you guys. One, because it's nice to hang out when we're not just recording.
Yeah.
But two, because so many people at the live shows have told me that Legacy is their favorite show on the network.
That's awesome. Which
I love because I love Casino. I love playing our characters. I think we all have the most fun, but it's fun to do this. And I hope people like this too, because we get to all hang out and talk together about Legacy. But I just want to say thank you guys so much for saying that at the live shows. It means so much. And I love Legacy. I love Skid as a GM, and I just have a blast on that show.
Thank you. I hear that a lot too. And I was wondering if they just tell me what they think I want to hear. But it's nice that they're telling you that as well.
Does it work though for you? Is it good?
Yeah.
Skid. Is it what you want to hear? What do you want
I'm
for
extremely,
your birthday?
I'm very manipulable. Like I have to monitor like where my information and stuff comes from, because it's just like I can be turned on a dime against my will instantly.
The thing is though, Skid, I feel like if they wanted to blow smoke up your ass, there are a lot of incredible things you do on our shows that they could blow smoke up your ass for. So if they wanted to tell you about Legacy, they I feel like they must be being genuine.
Yeah, I get, but I'm running that show. So it's like, that really feels more like I have more sort of control over that show ostensibly than like any of the other ones I do.
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe. But anyway, in any case, I definitely am appreciative of the people who seem to like it. So
it's so awesome. All right, let's get into the Glass Cannon podcast first, and then we will cycle back to Legacy. I'm very excited to talk about Legacy. We've got some awesome ideas from the audience, things they'd like us to talk about, some really good questions there. So we will get to that in a few minutes here, but I want to get your guys' thoughts on some pretty major events here in Gatewalkers as we wrap up book one, transition into book two in a hectic way. I've never seen a book-to-book transition that is combat right into combat, you know, kind of right in the middle. Have any of you seen that in any campaigns you've played in before or APs you've read even?
No.
Yeah, usually there's some like built-in downtime. These are some interesting and bold
That's the transition.
Choices here. Yeah.
It's like you can't – it's weird, unusual to transition from like one act in a story into another. Like there's a break, and it's like it's not normally. It's just like the break is like combat, you know.
Right.
There's it's very strange.
I hesitate to say fun.
I mean, it's not fun.
It was really hard for us, but it is interesting. It's an interesting way to, I don't know, kind of like elaborate on the gates. Sort of like the instability of everything. Like, I don't know. It was weird. It was like weird and unexpected. I don't think any of us expected that. So that part was fun. I agree with Skid. The downtime would have been preferred.
Welcome.
Yeah. And much needed. And much needed. What about, Matthew, what are some of your thoughts on the end of book one? Like that finale, we don't really know what's written versus what Troy does, but you can sort of get the sense that what the author was doing there was writing a teleporting final encounter. I'd never seen anything like that before. What were some of your thoughts on that as writing and encounter design?
I enjoyed it a lot. I felt like as in terms of encounter design, it was definitely the most creative encounter I feel like we've had on Gatewalkers in terms of design. I also felt like it was a little bit of fan service for those, you know, for those of us who have played not just in a Galarian setting, but you know, we played Starfinder, we played Across
Starfinder,
the Galaxy, and we got to be like, okay, we're going to go to all these planets that, you know, and it was fun. And like, you know, Skid got them first, of course, but I feel like I was like a good 5 seconds behind on most of them.
Yeah.
And I also like the encounter of facing a constant stream of enemies, but then being yanked out of it. So you don't actually have to defeat them. You just have to survive, which is fun, especially for 2E. I feel like it's kind of a fun left turn.
I'm going to look back real quick to last week's We Are Stupid that you guys might not be caught up on. Because it wasn't really things you did wrong. Sometimes I'll send you an email if Professor Eric has a line about your character or something you should know. I'll send it along. There wasn't really any of that, but he did have suggestions on how we play the game. But this one was really good just to make you aware of it. We did mention this last week, so I'll just move on quickly. But the remember in that final thing with the Eoxian, the atmosphere was like sucking us toward the gate. And we would have to roll these saves against it. And if we failed, we were stunned one. And if we were right next to the damn thing, you were stunned two. Remember, that really had us struggling in that fight. He brought up a tip. Remember this, as players, like you can interact with that hazard and disable it. It does have like a thing if you just spend an action to try to identify what is causing the hazard. The hazard is kind of like another creature, even if it's an environmental effect. Oh. So he was just saying, in general, in these games, keep that in mind. A lot of times, these things that you have specific roles against that are environmental hazards are actually capital H hazards that have like disabling DCs and stuff like that. So something that we could have done something that would have stopped us from being stunned, but we would have had to spend actions on it.
Spend my one action to stop being stunned?
Yeah, exactly.
Why is Professor Eric not present at our recordings?
Yeah.
That would be actually very helpful. Just like have him in our earphones, but not Troy's.
Piped into us.
I love it. Troy, I'd like to approach this from a different angle.
I'm getting word. That'd be very helpful.
But thank you from Professor Eric for that. Those were stressful. Like the losing actions against the Eoxian at the end there felt, you know, really brutal. And I didn't know. Did you think that we were going to defeat the Cairn White, or did you think we were going to teleport out before that fight was actually over? Did you have a guess in the middle, Sydney?
I thought that I was wrong, because I thought this was like a, you don't really have to fight sequence. I thought this was a break. So I thought it would be like, oh no, oh no, oh no, teleport it out. Oh no, oh no, teleport it out. Like, I didn't think we would be in, you know, five rounds of combat.
Yeah.
Before we were teleported out. So I was wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was wrong too. I did not think it would go that far, and it was, man, right down to the wire. But let's zoom up to this week where we transition apparently into book two and are immediately placed into a situation where this observatory is being raided by raiders, for lack of a better term. We have no identity of these hobgoblins just yet. We just know that they have some interest in this observatory. We don't really know what it is. We haven't had a chance to talk to our guy. And so we don't know anything about this guy. I don't even know his name. What's his name?
Sakuachi.
Sakuachi. Yes. Excellent. I don't even know this guy's name. So, I mean, just getting swarmed on right away. And then Sydney, you rush up, provoke an AOO and go down. Did you beat yourself up at all? Or do you not really care? Were you like, as an honest mistake, I don't know. Or were you like, I should have asked if there was, because I mean, I didn't think about it. You know what I mean? I don't know what went through your head in those moments as you were laying dying on the floor.
I think the frustrating thing is like that line between what the character knows versus what the player knows.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, Asta would have been smarter. Sydney was less smart in the moment.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, I don't know. I'm new to playing Amagus. I'm still learning things. And like the spell AOO thing is still like a weird sticking point in my brain, where running up and casting a spell, obviously, I know, guys, that provokes. But when
Didn't it used to not provoke for Amagus, though, like in 1E?
It did provoke. But because of the way the action comedy worked, you could cast 5 foot step in and then deliver the spell. So as long as you ended your turn 5 feet away, you could cast defensively, which if you were appropriately leveled was usually not a terribly difficult die roll.
Yeah, the action economy is very difficult for Magus in 2E because of spell strike, because it takes two actions. So like I always have the choice of move, do a spell strike, or try to attack, you know? So it's like I went to do the spell strike thinking that I could get a big hit off and ruin their formation. But I forgot. So Sydney felt silly. I did feel like dumb about it. But worse so, Asta's not a tank. So like when Asta goes down, I'm like, that's not her role. She's not supposed to really go down. She's just low level.
She is supposed to go down because she's not a tank.
Like
ultimately, but it's hard for those kind of classes. I feel the same way about rogues, high damage, low hit point classes that like put themselves in great danger. And if they don't outpace the enemy, they'll go down so fast. They're a glass cannon, right? But some people love playing that way, you know, like on the razor's edge. I get it. It's fun, but it is an unsafe way to play. And
it's bad when your cleric has no spells. Well, I'll say, that was the worst.
Yeah, that makes it a little tougher. Well, let me ask you, Sid, this this fine line that you discuss, you bring it up a lot as a player, I feel like, and you try to petition for things from Troy. Sometimes you're being silly, and you know you are, and it's just fun. But sometimes, like, you know, in a case like that, where you're like, look, Asta would not have run past that guy if I, you know, she could, she would have, let me just spend that recall knowledge to whatever it might be. Do you think, you know, as a GM, you tend to give players that benefit of the quick retcon for what their character might know versus what they do? Or do you kind of leap on their mistakes the way Troy does? I don't think there's a right and wrong. I'm just curious how you approach it, because sometimes you can be too benevolent, right? Like, there is a fine line.
I think I kind of GM similar to Skid, like heavier in role play and more open to like rule of cool stuff than let's say like the way Troy does, which I think is much more like that's rules as written. But I also think it depends on like if the player at my table is not paying attention, you know, if they're like on their phone, if they're doing something else and they're like, ah, run up and attack, then I'm going to get your ass. Then I'm going to be like, okay, you're not in this. But if it's somebody who like cares and they're paying attention, they just make a simple mistake or they weren't sure of a rule, I'm much more open to
honestly misunderstood something. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I'm more benevolent. I'm definitely more benevolent than Troy.
Are you currently GMing any like ongoing campaigns right now?
We started the Fallout TTRPG, which has been fun. So I've been GMing that, which is new to me, new to my players. We're all kind of like learning as we go. The system is interesting. It's reverse D20. So like higher Roll is low. Worse, lower is better.
Yeah.
Which is like tricky for my players because they're already new to most tabletop games. Mm-hmm. But it's been fun. They're creating their own faction. They created a town called New Judy. Which is so Fallout. It's like, and they made it up. Like it's,
that is a perfectly Fallout name. Yes.
That's great.
It's so funny. The things come naturally to them because I think it's a little easier for them to imagine this world instead of like high fantasy D&D 5th edition or something. But it's been a lot of fun. I like GMing. I missed it. So it's nice to GM something like completely different than all the games I'm currently playing.
Skid, you have been extremely effective as Buggles in sort of these, I want to say, just like pivotal moments. Like there have just been these moments where Buggles being there makes all the difference, whether it's a blast of psychic damage from range or if it's bringing somebody up with the, what do you call it when you can heal people real quick? The soothing mind or...
Yeah, whatever it's called.
I forget it off the top of my head. Yeah. Restore the mind. Restore the mind is, you know, a very cool ability. But you have struggled, obviously, with the remaster versus the original versus, you know, all these kind of things conflating into one. How are you feeling right now with the psychic? And is it something that you want to see remastered pretty quickly or that you want to move on from?
It came pretty close to doing like sort of what I had envisioned. There's some stuff about it that I just wish I could do away with. Like, there's some stuff that just don't match like my concept that I have a trouble kind of justifying thematically that I don't really care for. But I mean, it does give me like an opportunity to help, and it gives me a little bit of a framework to do kind of what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. So.
When you talk about what you wanted to do, I imagine it's this really cool role play of the dual personality or the parasite. We still don't know really what it is, but it's really neat to see. When the Kaula Khan comes out, I feel like a sense of relief. You know what I mean? Like in a way, because I'm like, oh, thank God, now we're going to kick some ass. Like it is a neat narrative device that you've employed here.
Yeah, I dig part of it, like the way the mechanics kind of feed into that, that's great. Like I love that and the way that informed sort of what I wanted to do with it. Like that's awesome. I like just the stuff about it that I do and like when I get to do it. Like I'm really, really enjoying it.
Awesome. Matthew Barnes is huge in this fight, tactically speaking, moving up, taking these guys on toe-to-toe, putting down, I think, two of the three that went down, I think, might have been Barnes. Really well done. But if it's that third one that you put down, I can't remember exactly. I think it might have been. It drives off the fourth raider who runs away. This is our cliffhanger is the classic fleeing combatant to end the encounter We are all beat up. We are in really bad shape. Please don't chase after him. What are you going to do? Are you going to chase after him?
I guess we'll have to listen to the episode, next episode, to find out.
We can't. We have already recorded, so we can't go into detail on what happens next. But yeah, sure enough, it lies. Your fate is in our hands, Matthew. Your fate is in our hands.
And vice versa.
Fate is in yours. Our fate is in your hands.
Our fate is in your hands, dude.
Yes. Our fate is in your hands, Matthew. So we shall see. We shall see what happens there. But in the interest of time and getting to legacy, let's do a little We Are Stupid. Sing us in, good buddy Nick.
The new £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, 4 McNuggets, and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11 a.m. Not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants subject to availability.
We are stupid.
We're so stupid. Here's a good one. I'll start off with myself. This is fantastic, and it makes me so angry because I know this rule and I forget it all the time. And whenever I hear it again, I'm like, I love that little ticky-tack rule, but I still always forget it, and I wish I didn't. This is big. When we teleport into this place, and he hands us, Sakuachi hands us the potions. Remember, Brother Rabius starts like greedily drinking the potions in order to heal. Brother Rabius was sickened and thus could not have drunk a healing potion at the start of the combat. I forgot this rule. It is the last line. Is the last line of Sinkend. You can't willingly ingest anything, including elixirs and potions, while sickened. It's such a huge rule. Like, if you're sickened, it could be life or death. And so, player core 446, cited by Professor Eric. I couldn't have drank it. I don't think it makes a difference right now.
You have to spend the action to retch, and then you can drink? Or what? How's that?
Well, you spend the action to retch, then you have to successfully retch. It's still a roll.
Oh, right. It's a roll. Yeah.
And then you can get unsickened, and then you can drink. But as long as you're sick, like, you can't, like, you can't keep it down. So that's just a good one. I like that one. So thank you for reminding me of that. I'll try to remember that next time.
That's a fun rule. At first I was like, that's a very Joe bit of taste to enjoy a little, but actually I like it too.
Yeah, it's fun little added layer, and I've known this rule before, and I was like, I got to remember that next time. Then of course forgot immediately. Let's go to Troy. This is interesting. Get ready for this. Get ready to get out your pitchforks.
Oh,
the shield bonus and the formation bonus are both circumstance bonuses.
They don't stack. Oh. Son of a bitch.
How about that?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, you want another layer to it?
Didn't we miss a lot by one? I feel like
you want to know another layer to it? The formation bonus doesn't come into play until you have two allies next to you. Not just one. So it said you need to have two allies next to you, and to quote Professor Eric, you are not your own ally in PF2. So Pathfinder 2 has made a clear distinction in how they use the language. You are not your ally. So something that only affects allies does not affect you, and vice versa. So I think you needed to have two allies next to you in order for all three to get the bonus.
So I think solid asterisk, right? Like at this point?
Right. Yeah. No, unfortunately, I don't think so, because here's where it all comes back around. The shield bonus is +2, not +1. So Troy was like saying all of that stuff wrong, but I think in the end, anybody who raised a shield, that was accurate. Their AC was accurate because he was reducing his thing by one. And so I think it didn't really foul up the AC too much, but there might have been some formation ones that should not have been formation if they had not raised their shield. So that would be interesting.
I'm still pissed.
Yeah, you should be pissed. That's why I read it in that order. I wanted you to get all fired up. I didn't want to start with, it didn't really matter mathematically. No, fuck that. All right, and then just a couple quick things, and then we'll move on to legacy. This is from Professor Eric. You can raise a shield while holding the bow. Remember, we had this argument. To me, that's just like, I put this, you and me, Skid, I think the same way. Like, it doesn't make any logical sense. No one runs out with a bow, long bow in one hand and a full shield in the other. It just doesn't make any sense. But Professor Buckler, Eric lays out, Buckler, of course, by the book. You could run out with a shield if you wanted and then ungrip the shield as a free action. You'd have to regrip it again before you could use it, blah, blah, blah. And then he says, besides from the narrative believability side, I'd have a problem picturing trying to shoot a bow with a non-buckler-sized shield dangling from your arrow-pulling arm. That's exactly what I'm saying. So yeah. I generally agree that raiders who are pre-armed with their bow probably wouldn't have their shields out.
Yeah.
That's all I was saying. So I think we can agree on that point. And lastly, let's not forget Matthew. Matthew Kabatakaza, you cheating piece of shit. The mirror's reflection ability has the manipulate trait.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
that
yeah,
would have provoked from the Raiders. There was
in
definitely
my defense,
some...
Not sorry. My attack of opportunity.
So apparently, Sydney, and this one's for you. I mean, they're out there. They love you. The Nash loves you.
I
don't know if it was a combo of Discord or YouTube comments, a bit of both, but Professor Eric will look through these things and says, there was definitely some chatter about Troy picking on Asta while Barnes gets ignored for attacks of opportunity.
Yeah, what's with that? What's with that bullshit, right, Sydney?
Yeah.
You.
Right? I mean, we're all on Sydney's side, right?
Right, guys?
Yeah.
Right, everybody? I'm not actually too mad about that, but thank you for the kind words online.
Oh, I'm mad about that. I'm mad at myself. I can't believe I didn't ask if that has the manipulate trait at the time, because it's such an obvious thing that should provoke an attack of opportunity. I totally forgot.
We don't face, to the game's credit, we don't face a ton of enemies with attack of opportunities anymore.
That's true.
Playing almost exclusively at early levels as we have been. Yeah, we really don't. We haven't run into a lot of them, especially.
But now, I think we are all a little bit more aware. We're going to be a little bit more on top of it. Right, Matthew?
Totally.
And you're going to follow the rules, right, Matthew? And you're going to take those attacks of opportunity.
100% of the time that you also follow the rules.
Oh, perfect. That's good. That's good statistics. That's good math.
I kind of like that encounter, though. I mean, I feel like we haven't gotten a lot of those, you know, underleveled enemy encounters where we can...
Yeah.
Maybe get practice with our tactics.
A group of lower leveled or similar leveled enemies instead of always just like one over leveled creature over and over again in Gatewalkers. Yeah, that's definitely
so,
what it feels
where it's
like.
So dire. Even I feel like even the groups of enemies in the encounters we've had so far, everything feels so dire because you go down so frequently at lower levels. We haven't actually gotten to gel as a team. Like we don't.
Yeah, I went down very fast. So I don't know about that.
But it's also felt to me like these, so many of these, you're not like rolling a natural 9 and hitting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which, you know, you don't always need that, but sometimes that would be nice. You know, like always having to roll a natural 16 or higher to even get a hit is like, it gets draining after a while as a player. You're just like, this is grating on my fun. You know, when you can just never hit because the thing's AC is 3 levels higher than you. So that, you know, that was nice. I mean, the formation, the shield helped their ACs, but it was nice to be like, that's a 19. Like, well, he's off guard. And so that's a hit, you know, and that's fun when those kind of things,
agreed,
you know.
I feel like we want the reps, right? Like we want to be able to figure out how we function together.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the thing, like, I'm reading and watching YouTube videos and kind of studying about how to play tactically. And you know, I feel like I'm still missing obvious things because, you know, in the moment, you know, yes, I would love to flank with the mirror's reflection, but you know, it's like, okay, well, I have to get up there and to get up there, then I can't flank, and then I'm leaving myself open to 4 other guys. And it's like, you know, like situationally, I feel like I'm still learning how tactics apply.
Yeah.
But it's hard to do that against massive monsters.
Yeah. Agreed.
Learn.
All right. Let's take it to a little listener mail and listener mail, Legacy of the Ancients edition.
Ooh.
Sing us in, Nyack.
It's time to listen to mail. You gotta get your brain off on it. It's time to listen to mail. You gotta cue that.
Thank you, Nicholas, best buddy. Hey, by the way, we tried to get Nick. We wish Nick was here. We would have done just an only Legacy dedicated episode. But, you know, Nick's a very busy man. We were trying to work a way to get him on here. But, like, literally... If the four of us and Nick are all available in the same time window, we have to record an episode of Legacy of the Ancients immediately.
Legally.
Like, there is, like, no other a way we could get around that. So, unfortunately, we miss you, Nick. Nick's probably listening, so make sure you talk shit on him. This is, it's sad to not have him here, but let's do some Legacy of the Ancients questions from the Naish. This one from, on Discord, Jerry Justice writes in and says...
Hi, Jerry.
Is anyone in the party surprised that they made it this far? There have been many near deaths, and long form campaigns are so rare. The running it for a show certainly helps that latter point. I always like looking back on a long game with humble beginnings to consider just how far the characters have advanced in such a short period of time. Do you still feel inspired by your characters? And is backstory material easy to come by this far in? So there's a lot in there. I'm going to just kind of point this to you for a moment, Sydney. You said you love Casino. And you did not start at the very beginning of this campaign. You came in, you know, one book in. You started in book two, but you've been on it for a really long time. Are you still engaging fully with the campaign and with Casino in the same way that you were a couple years ago?
Yeah, I think even more so in new ways. That's always fun. Like, when you join a campaign, especially halfway in, this happened with Androids and Aliens as well. It's very intimidating, and you want to create a character that meshes well with the group and the, you know, the synergy that everybody's already got. And it was hard because Casino didn't know anything. Like, you guys had all these experiences, and Casino was kind of like, well, that doesn't really matter to me, but I like you guys, so, like, I'll stick around. But now she's fully invested. So, like, her character has grown sort of from this silly, free-spirited, sheltered person who lived in Sandpoint, you know, ran away from the circus. So much to uncover in her backstory. We haven't even gotten there, guys. But... she's really become this, like, older, more mature version of herself. She's still silly, but she has stakes. She has people she cares about. So I feel like I'm more invested in her in serious ways. But there's, like, growing pains.
I think a big turning point for her, for me at least, was the...
getting her girlfriend. What were you going to say?
Girlfriend, yeah. I mean, on one side, for sure, for your part. But the, no, when the Varisian stuff came up in Magnemar, you know, the sort of oppression of the Varisians by the government or the, I can't remember who exactly what it was that was kind of perpetrating those crimes, those prejudice crimes. It was, like, really cool to see her be like, no, fuck this, and, like, fight back hard against that. And that, I think, is where she got, stopped being a little bit like, oh, I'm just silly and I have a funny name, to, like, being, you know, a character with stakes that was, you know, somebody that we were all rallying behind to move the story forward. So, that was a cool moment. What about Northwood, Matthew? How are you feeling about Northwood? Is his shtick tiring you at all, or are you still loving that old bastard?
First of all, I resent the word shtick. just because he's hilarious and
just,
charming,
yeah, just because he's, doesn't mean he's taking any a vow of poverty.
No, I love Northwood. I would play him forever if I could. I am surprised he's still alive. I thought he definitely was going down in the Barl Breakbones fight.
Yeah.
But for some luck, Alfie, obviously, we can open that can of worms if we want to. But I mean, I, in terms of, like, is there plenty of backstory stuff to come? I could feel like I could write flashbacks for Northwood for literally every episode.
Yeah.
Nick even tried to write a flashback for Northwood.
Nick wants to write flashbacks for all of us. I get texts from Nick, and it's just like, I have an idea for a Xerxes' backstory. I'm just like, I got a lot going on, man. I'll get back to you. he's a very inspired player, and he obviously elevates all of us at the table, especially with his note taking and stuff.
Oh,
it's unbelievable.
It's so
useful. I mean, the way that I can keyword search our campaign in that document is just amazing, and find out where we got items, etc. It's really fun. Oh, speaking of which, let me just jump to Zangief on Twitter, or on Discord. Zangief on Discord, who says, on the subject of random...
I think it's pronounced Zangief.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Street Fighter character.
Oh, yeah, it's Zangief. You're right. It is not Zangief. I apologize. It's Pigpen said, ask why they never sold the tiny returning dagger from book one. There's 4,000 gold pieces just sitting there.
That's the question.
I wasn't there.
Whoops. Yep.
Good answer.
Sydney has that out. You know what? That was on Troy's notes.
It was on Troy's notes.
Oh, wow.
That's what it was.
Must have
Troy's
been.
Troy's notes.
Must have
He took such good notes.
Skid, how long can we retcon? How long does it last?
I assumed you were keeping it as a trophy, like a serial killer. That was my assumption. If you want to sell it, you can still sell it, of course.
Oh, okay.
Nick is listening to this right now, and if he's on his bike, he's like, the second I get to a computer, I am going to find out where that dagger is right now. I have it in my notes somewhere. And if he doesn't find the answer, he's going to sell it. And he's going to give us the gold. And
yeah, we should have prefaced that question with a warning for Nick to please slow down and pull over before listening.
Yeah,
to
yeah. He didn't
drive off the Queensboro Bridge.
Yeah. Well, let's see if we can upset Nick a little bit more. Zangief, this is what I meant to say. Zangief followed this up with says, on the subject of random weapons, is anyone going to tell Nick the reason he struggles with the repeating crossbow is because it's an exotic weapon? So he's taking a -4 penalty on it because he's not proficient? Or is it all just a running joke to see how long it takes for him to figure it out? No, I didn't know that was an exotic weapon off the top of my head. Maybe he's not realizing it's taking a severe penalty. I don't know. Nick?
Now he's throwing his bike off of the bridge.
Yeah, now he's throwing his bike off the 59th Street Bridge into the East River. brutal. Brutal. All right, let's move on to another question here. This one from Suburbanite. Suburbanite, awesome to see, to hear from you. I'd love to know how the experiences of those of you who played Giant Slayer are affecting your approach to the campaign in general. And I'm wondering if it's impacting your approach specifically as it pertains to Jorgenfist. It's a really good question, because my first thought upon seeing this beautiful artwork, and that was just like fan made artwork, right? That you had put up, Skid, of Jorgenfist.
No, that was from the book.
Oh, that's from the book. Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you had mentioned that it was somebody else had made it, but it gave me immediate vibes of Skirkatla's like tomb and that whole area. You know what I mean? Where it's just like this overwhelming sized thing that you're like. Well, I'll tell you, I can answer this question very directly. It is impacting directly my approach, and my approach is going to be, I mean, we're kind of in the middle of it right now, but my approach is pretty much going to be like, we have to use stealth, we have to use deception, we have to use subterfuge, right? Like in some way. My first thought was like, how are we going to turn these giants on each other? You know, like that's sort of the first thing that I thought, and that I think that's largely motivated by the Giant Slayer campaign. Matthew, did you have any flashbacks upon setting your eyes on Jorgenfist to Giant Slayer?
Yeah, I was terrified because I mean, we're a little more sturdy now, but you know, it's the classic thing. You have to get in close to a giant, which provokes, and then you have to stay up close, which is worse, and it's dangerous. And we don't have a particularly strong set of ranged options. Averxius is kind of our ranged combat option. We send him in.
Yeah.
He dies.
Yeah. Comes yeah. Back. He just flies in and melees. And yeah, it's not really a true ranged option. So
like we survived Giant Slayer by either having Baron and or Nestor, you know, around to just pepper them for a while.
Right. Yeah. And then for a little while, Lork in that part.
Yeah.
Because he was an elf then. And right. had been specced for ranged.
That's right.
It's a crazy story.
Sydney, I got a story. You had to be there.
Yeah. Give me a beer sometime and I'll tell you about it. So, all right, let's do a question here from Pug. It says, have you ever thought about doing a very special in studio episode of Legacy?
I mean, I wish we could record every episode in the studio. Take, I mean, that's one of the things that like I loved about Raiders so much is that we were recording it in person.
Yeah.
I think that's what people still will come to me and it's just like, I miss Raiders. And I think that is a big reason is because like we were all together, like while we were doing it. I honestly wish we could. There's no way. I don't think
there's one issue though that would present itself if we recorded in person. One, I can't do cartwheels with headphones in, and I would have to do cartwheels.
And she does do them on the calls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And two, Joe would kill Nick.
That's true.
I'd strangle him. The only reason Nick's alive right now is because he was on the other side of a Zoom call. I mean, we're not going to get an in-studio legacy until we can offer Nick a higher salary than Marvel. So I'm not... I think he'd leave Marvel in a heartbeat if we paid him a higher salary. 100%. and just play role-playing games all day. But yeah, we can't afford him. Yeah. So his days are totally booked. So he'll jam in some time late at night to play some Legacy with us. And to his credit, he really brings the focus when he comes. He leaves all that work shit behind and really focuses on Legacy, but he is too busy to get in studio, unfortunately. Also from Pug, character death. Of all of your shows, especially Pathfinder shows, Legacy has the fewest slash no deaths. Would you all play a backup character this late into the campaign, or would the group seek to resurrect a dead character?
Oh.
Very good question. Obviously, you kind of take it case by case, but let's talk about it. You know, a little pre-talk as players. You know, what would you, what do you feel like you would do if fucking Northwood died? I mean, I'd resurrect him whether you wanted him alive or not.
I don't know. I don't love resurrection.
I don't either.
No, you don't like it?
I mean, like when we did it for Lork, it was that one was my pitch originally.
That's reincarnation.
So that was reincarnation.
It's different, and it was fun for sure.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. I love Northwood, but at the same time, I just don't love resurrection as a
As a mechanic, as a story from a story perspective, I don't like it at all.
Oh, interesting.
I don't.
I didn't know that. I mean,
it has to be. It's just like if you have enough money, like you can just, there's no such thing as death by violent means anymore. Like you just can't die. Mm. And it's just, for me, it just like kind of lifts the stakes ultimately for everything. Reincarnation is a little different because like there's a major price to pay if you do want to come back. Like you have to roll the dice and you could become coming back as something you do not want to be or intend to be. That's something that's a huge like kind of shift that takes place as a result of doing it. If it does happen, I think it should be incredibly rare and very hard to do. But the way the mechanics work is just like, you know, grind up a diamond, go to a guy, boom, you're back
to life.
Well, we could also have the next Viscount Northwood. Whoever he may be,
right?
And I gotta say, in my earlier playthrough of Rise of the Rune Lords, we had a character death pretty late, later than you guys are actually, and it resulted in one of my favorite characters that I've ever run a game with come into the campaign at that point. And it wouldn't have happened if they had just been able to, you know, resurrect. So
what level was this?
That would have been like 13.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I'm glad you liked that character. I mean, this is what I struggled with Dalgrith in the Giant Slayer campaign. It was like, by the time you're this high level, it's so strange to try to bring in a backup character who is a demigod of adventuring, right? And is now going to get wrapped up in this story. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Sid?
Yeah, it's tricky. It's that kind of thing of like, when we talk about it in Gatewalkers 2, I feel like we're always like, have a backup character, but also at what point is like the adventure over because the main characters like have died off? Mm-hmm. So that's like a GM question. As a player, I'll always do a backup. I think it's more fun, like Skid said, than just bringing it. There's no stakes then. What's the point? So I'd rather do a backup, but I do feel like, okay, so what? They like find them in the woods and just like join them. I don't know. There's got to be good tie-ins because my whole thing is storytelling. You know, the narrative is important. So yeah, case by case. It depends. If Casino died, I'd be really sad. I would want her to come back. But if it doesn't fit the story, then it doesn't fit.
Times New Skeleton asks, what are the inspiration for your characters in Legacy? I can see the inspiration of perhaps Don Quixote with Matthew's character. Mm. Thank you. Mm. Matthew, is there a specific inspiration you can point to for Lord Northwood?
Don Quixote is definitely in there. I don't know if that was the original concept. Peter O'Toole in My Favorite Year is kind of the inspiration. That's why he was originally, when we were doing casting, that's why he was played by Peter O'Toole. Mm. He was kind of like fusing both the Peter O'Toole character, the Peter O'Toole actual persona, and then also the persona of the characters, the Peter O'Toole character played in My Favorite Year, like the kind of swashbuckling.
He was basically Errol Flynn.
The Errol Flynn parts, exactly.
In that movie, and so.
And then also he's Peter O'Toole in My Favorite Year mixed with, like, if he, as a younger man, he had been Captain Picard.
Yeah, I can see that. Hmm. I can see that. Cool. Sid, Casino? Were you just trying to get a laugh for one episode and didn't realize this would turn into a campaign?
Her name.
One cheap laugh.
Her name is meant to inspire joy, yes. Her name's meant to make you giggle. But in terms of inspiration, I feel like I had just, or I was thinking about the TV show Glow. Guys, remember
really?
That?
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a good show. Now I like that show.
I love Glow. Oh, yeah. That is so casino. That's hilarious.
Like the leotard silliness, but also like fighting, just like straight up brutal wrestling sometimes. And I don't know. I just loved the idea of the juxtaposition of the two. Then later I saw the movie Love Lies Bleeding and I was like, oh, yeah. That's also so what I'm going for. It's like this powerful, strong woman who can sometimes be so immature and just like out of her mind. But yeah, the character.
I was thinking a lot about Casino when I saw that movie. It was just like, that's.
I'm like, they're reading my thoughts for her stuff. But a lot of it was silly. Yeah. She was like a circus performer and, you know, she's got this silly new class that I had never played to me. But Blood Rager, I was like, that's so crazy. It's like magic barbarian. How fun. But like I said, she's gotten more mature. She's grown. Mm. She's grown on me in many ways.
My initial inspiration for the class of Summoner was just to power game straight up. Like I remember we were in the middle of COVID. That's when we started this because the GCP was shut down. I was in Oklahoma, I believe, living with my in-laws, basically. And we were like, we got to start something. We were doing New Game Who Dis. So it was like, let's have Skid run us through Raiders or Legacy, because he already knows Rise of the Rune Lords. And Troy and I had always wanted to play in that campaign. We're like, yeah, let's do it. That'll be fun. And I was like, you know what? I'm so sick and tired of playing narrative focused characters with split ability scores. So I just looked up online, what is the most broken class in 1E? And it's the Summoner.
It is.
And I was like, all right, I'm going to play a Summoner and I'm not going to scrimp on anything. I'm going to min max everything. So that was the initial thing. But then I was like, all right, when I was reading the Eidolon, I was like, I'm trying to think of something less that interests me less than being like, I bring in an alligator dinosaur thing, and each level I can add a leg onto it. You know, I was like, this is so weird and so lame. I don't understand why the thing you're attached to isn't like a sentient being that is kind of like an interplanar battle of wills. Like, to me, I thought that sounded so much more interesting. So then inspiration for Foley was just kind of me at that time. I was literally just like, it was COVID, man. I wasn't seeing anybody. And I was just like fishing every day. And I was like, what if just like a simple fisherman just gets attached to like a godlike immortal creature from the plane of hell. That was sort of the initial idea. And then as I started running with it, I did, and people have like told this to me at live shows and stuff when they've come up to me, like, are you like really just playing Averxius and Foley's like the side character, you know? And I'm like, yeah, pretty much. Because like early on, I was like, oh, I'll play like a regular guy that gets wrapped up in the Rise of the Rune Lords adventure. But then, you know, pretty soon I was like, oh, it's so interesting to delve into how a lawful evil character would play with a moral party. It's, you know, there's no reason it can't happen, but they just have to have motives that are for whatever reason. And I've had a lot of fun doing that. So yeah, I've really enjoyed that aspect. A lot of Averxius's inspiration comes from Pathfinder. It comes from reading the devil. They did a devil book. I can't remember what it is now. They did a devil like supplement book that went deep into the layers of hell, the different deities, and then all the different like, and I just loved reading about the armies of hell and all the, you know, the rigorous training and hell knights and all that kind of stuff, who are the mortal version. And I dove into it with Averxius. So I can kind of combine those two things. Anyway, that is going to wrap it up for now. Guys, thank you so much for coming in and doing this with us. Naish, thank you for writing in some questions for Legacy of the Ancients. It was, that was really fun. Troy should hopefully be back next week. We'll be back on our regular schedule. It is, after all, Matthew's birthday, and he's got a big gift to unwrap.
Big
Skid
gift
as well.
To open and Skid big... too.
And Skid too.
I hope it's a bike.
Do you want a bike?
I want a red bike.
What do you want?
I want a Huffy. I want a red Huffy.
Ooh, a red Huffy.
Perfect. Can you make a red Huffy using the parts you have lying around your house?
Yeah, it looks like you have enough back there for
enough red in that back corner.
There's a lot of red stuff back there. Like you should be able to make a bike.
Thank you guys. Remember to tune in to the Glass Cannon Podcast, episode 57. We're gonna see the results of Matthew's decision as Barnes is tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Eastern, on the YouTube premiere. And then of course catch Skid and I and Rob Kirkovich tomorrow, 12 o'clock Eastern, live on Twitch for some Space Marines 2. Maybe we finish the campaign. I don't know, we'll see. Take it easy, everybody. Matthew, Skid, Sid, thank you so much for coming by and doing the fodder this week. We'll talk to you guys again soon. Take it easy, everybody. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Do you like what you hear? Well, then it's time to make your membership official. You can start your 30-day free trial today and become an official member of The Nash at jointhenash.com with the promo code GCN30. That's jointhenash.com and use code GCN30. That's GCN30 to gain access to exclusive podcasts, ad-free episodes, and live streams you can't find anywhere else. Once again, it's jointhenash.com. Use code GCN30 at sign up to get your first 30 days for free. See what everybody else is talking about and join the Nash today.